You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey, y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 43. In the last show, we talked about 18 fun facts about New Orleans. Well, it turns out there was actually 17. Somehow I skipped one. But there's still a lot of fun there. We talked about chess champions, Brennan's, dental floss, the Superdome, the longest bridge over water, and a whole lot more. Go ahead, listen to it, test your knowledge, have some fun, and learn a little bit along the way. If you missed it, really go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Today's show is going to be a really frequently requested topic. It's all about film and television shows that were filmed here in New Orleans. I had a fun discussion with a local tour guide where we talk about the origins of film in New Orleans, as well as some of the current TV and movies being filmed here in the city. But first, a word from our sponsor, me. As you know, the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast is all about helping you explore New Orleans like an insider. If you're planning a trip to New Orleans and you want to cut through all the research, we're here to help you. We do a little travel consult. It consists of a couple things. First, you complete a brief questionnaire to help us get to know you a little bit and the experience that you want to have in New Orleans. It includes things like your interests, your budget, the dates of your visit, all those kind of things. After that, we set up a 20 to 30 minute phone call or video call with me, and during the call, we get to know each other a little better. It really helps us kind of dial in the things you're looking for and help refine what a great trip would look like to you. After that, I prepare and deliver to you a PDF document with our recommendations for your trip. And depending on your needs, the report will contain specific places to eat, stay, drink, all the things you're used to in the podcast, but customized for you. Sounds good? If it does, send me an email at mark@beyondbourbonst.com to get the details. And we're also going to put a link on our website over at beyondbourbonst.com, depending on when you listen to this. Now, let's jump into today's show. Hey, y'all, welcome to the show today. My guest today is the owner and operator of the New Orleans Movie and TV Tours. He's a former cameraman, which I'm interested to find out about. He's a native of Connecticut who, like many people, fell in love with New Orleans and made it his home. He's Jonathan Ray. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Mark. Yeah, I'm a nutmegger. Yeah, can you believe that? Thanks for having me. Well, thanks for having me in this beautiful Catahoula Hotel drinking this wonderful Pisco Sour.
Yeah,
very refreshing on this. What is it, 110 heat index kind
probably,
of afternoon in
like
New Orleans?
That, right? Yeah, I've only had like two sips and I'm already having trouble with words. But
well, maybe you should lay off that for a little bit.
Then. It's a good point, though. Well, thank you to the Catahoula Hotel for hosting us. I actually did, longtime listeners will remember, last summer, I think, we did episode 25. It was actually back in November. We did The Girl's Guide to New Orleans, and we did that interview up. It was a little bit cooler up on the roof here. It's a little hot today to be outside. But you should check out the Catahoula Hotel. It's a great place to have a drink like we're doing for happy hour and some really unique accommodations. And we were talking about, they host events here as well, too. So when we get into that afterwards, I'll put all that over on the show notes. This particular topic today, we're going to talk all about movies and TV and film in New Orleans. But this is the 43rd episode. And my guess is last summer, I got the first request. And true confession here, I'm not a huge movie buff. So I was like, well, this is great, but I got to find the right person. So then you stumbled into my life online, which sounds far worse than I mean it. But I found out about New Orleans Movie and TV Tours, and I thought it would be a great fit. So welcome. I appreciate it.
Well, cool. Thanks for having me. You know, it's a subject that's very near and dear to my heart. And, you know, it's something I never even thought I'd be a part of before I moved here from Connecticut. You know, I came down here about 8-9 years ago now, and that's when the film boom started kind of happening. You know, we started the film credits here in 2002. And
right.
That's pretty much the impetus, the reason why films are anywhere these days, pretty much. So I started doing something through New Orleans Video Access Center down in the Bywater. They had camera classes to train people how to get in the film industry because it was new and they needed people. And there's no one here from LA or New York yet. So I was like, I'm a cameraman. I love photography. Let's do this. So I was trained to do it, jumped right in, made some friends because that's how you get jobs on film sets. It's not about what you know. It's about who you know completely. And started working on a couple of films as a second assistant cameraman. and did that for two movies. One movie you probably never saw, a Kate Hudson movie, because you don't see movies anyway. Then I did another Jason Statham movie. Then I was like, wow, it's such a rough lifestyle, that because when you work on film, you're working Monday through Friday, 12 to 20 hours a day. And listeners, if you've never been here in New Orleans working outside for 12 to 20 hours a day, it's a rough life. Yeah, and you're a freelance worker. So once your job's over, once the movie's over, in 6-8 weeks, you're unemployed. So I'm 42 now, so I'm a little bit older. I need a little more security. So I was like, oh, what a great idea. Security? Let's start my own business. So I was sitting around one day, and I was like, I still want to do something with film, though, but what do I want to do? And I was like, what about if I build a van with video screens, and I'll just educate the world on the history of filming movies here? I'll take them around, show them where stuff was filmed, and tell them stories. And my ex-wife now, my wife at the time, she's like, this is a horrible idea. And I was like, no, this is the greatest idea ever. She's like, it's never going to work. I'm like, this is going to work. And now we're here 6 years later and still in business and we're talking. So it's been a good ride so far. And that's my long story short from Connecticut in film.
That's awesome. So what brought you to New Orleans the first time?
I had friends living here. It was Jazz Fest.
Excellent.
I'm sure you've heard this story, you know, being from here, that people, you know, the Jazz Fest, people come here, fall in love with it because it's springtime in New Orleans. It's crawfish season. Everything's in bloom. The weather's perfect. The music's perfect. And my wife and I tried moving back to Connecticut. And we were sitting there. It was like one cold winter night that night, listening to OZ on the radio, as you do when you're feeling homesick from a place you've never called home, really. And we're like, we should just move to New Orleans. So we packed up our house, rented out, and moved down here within 2 weeks. And been here ever since.
Yeah. That's interesting. And you mentioned OZ, WWOZ. So you were on air for a couple of years there at WWOZ.
I had my own show on WWOZ for 5 years. I did the late night show Tuesday at midnight. I did a jazz fusion, jazz funk kind of show. Yeah.
So I have a theory. Longtime listeners have heard this. I have a theory about, and this happens all the time, I hear people fall in love with the city and move. I was born here and moved away for years and came back. So it's my birthright. But I think New Orleans gets in your pores like the humidity. And once it gets in, you can't get it out. And, you know, for a certain number of people, and it seems to be more and more all the time, they just feel that lure. And there's a lot of opportunity in New Orleans and a lot to love. And people like you guys just wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm gonna make that my home.
Yeah. You know, and I thought when I first moved here, what I really loved about it. I thought, you know, the allure was the culture, the food, the music, the drinking, the arts and stuff like that. And that's all fine and wonderful on a surface level. But then you really get to live here for a while and you get settled in and you realize the best part about living here is the community.
Yeah.
You know, the people. You take away all that other stuff and it's this magical, vibrant community and just something unlike I had ever never seen before. Growing up in Connecticut in the woods, I had no neighbors. They were like wild turkey and deer and stuff. So that's what I found out after living here for a couple of years. That's what really makes it truly magical.
So that's terrific. And right, I think you hit on it. It is the people and the community and the food and the sharing, all of that, right? We're very sociable people here.
Yeah.
And so that, and it seems to me that that's a great tie-in to what you've ended up doing with New Orleans movie and TV tours as well. And I want to get into that a little bit about, well, a lot actually, about how people can experience that. But if we could, I kind of want to jump back. You mentioned Hollywood South. And so for maybe people that don't know that, what does Hollywood South mean? What is that about?
Hollywood South. So for many, many years, Hollywood is Los Angeles. You know, everything was filmed in Hollywood, in LA, all your soundstage, everything was out there. And then Louisiana decided to offer a tax incentive to kind of maybe lure them out here. And that happened in 2002. So before 2002, Hollywood would film on location to showcase a city, a beautiful location. And then these film credits started happening, and they're pretty deep incentives. It's a statewide thing, percentage-based. You know, you can get like 30% tax credit off everything you spend in the state of Louisiana. So 2002 started happening, and we started seeing, instead of one movie come here every year, we started seeing 5 or 6 movies come every year. And then people caught on that. We actually had crew base here. We had versatility. You know, we had good landscape, and it was a fun place to film a movie, and it wasn't L.A. So Hollywood started loving it here to the point where like 4 or 5 years ago, you know, we were filming 100 major motion pictures and television shows in Louisiana, where we were filmed actually more movies here than in L.A. for 2 years, more than LA or New York. So it kind of just happened. Then the moniker Hollywood South kind of came into play, you know, and I'd love to think that they came here because, you know, we're a beautiful, beautiful, magical place. That's why they used to come here. But now, honestly, they come here for our tax credits.
Right.
And sadly enough, when you watch a lot of these movies nowadays, if you go to the theater, you're not even going to know it's New Orleans. If you go see Jurassic World, I mean, this does not look like Dinosaur Island, but that was filmed here, you know? So people don't even really know that we have this giant film industry because it's never set here. Then about a year or so ago, our former governor tried running for president. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I did notice that.
And he kind of wanted to look fiscally conservative, you know? So he wanted to pass a little blockage on the film credits. So they did that. That was about a year and a half ago now. And so the movie industry basically said, if I can't have my film credits, I'm going to go elsewhere. And they all went to Georgia, where pretty much everyone is in Georgia right now, including all my friends. But at one point during the heyday, 3-4 years ago, this was, you know, 15,000 jobs in Louisiana. The Louisiana Film and Economic Association did a survey on that. 15,000 jobs, about $1 billion in direct spending, then another $3 billion and ancillary spending through tourism and all that. So we were building this monster, this amazing thing, jobs, opportunity. Then TV shows like NCS started coming. And what does that do for the city of New Orleans? People come here for the first time ever now because of this TV show. It drives tourism. So there's so much great stuff that happened in this industry that we created that we just kind of let slip away to the point where today, even though it's summer, we're filming two TV shows today.
And there's talk of it coming back, and I know that the new governor has started to ease that up, and they're working with the legislature. Nonetheless, I think you're right. We built this huge industry here, and then it walked away. Well, you have all that infrastructure now left with nothing to do.
We created it, and it is called the runaway film industry for a reason. This has happened in other states. I think 40 states offer these film credits. Michigan had it for a while. They got rid of it. North Carolina had it. They got rid of it, and overnight, what happens? Gone.
Sure.
They'll move right on. And now Georgia is a thriving economy. Yeah. They've got money to throw away. They have no deficit, and they were willing to give them whatever they want. And the big contentious thing here was, I think, you know, when you're looking at budget deficits, people like just didn't understand. They saw the direct spending versus what we were giving them. And they're like, well, why are we giving this industry that makes billions of dollars any money? And they were just looking at that. Mm. They're like, you know what? We can just take that money and go somewhere else with it. And they weren't really looking at the good side of it. They're just looking at those initial hard costs. And I think that's what really, really hurt us when it went up to legislation.
Sure. Well, hopefully the tide is changing a little bit, and hopefully it will come back, because the infrastructure, much of it's still here. You see it, and you see the support, and some of it's gone away.
It's here. And I'll tell you right now, all my friends that are in Georgia right now working that live here would love to come home.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'd love to come back. You know, I mean, people forget that. Do you know, I mean, you probably know, you're born and raised here. This is where the first movie theater in the world was. In New Orleans, movie theater in the world. And it was actually three blocks just from us on Canal Street, the Vidascope. First movie theater in the world.
Yeah, so...
I mean, we've got some roots here in movies.
Yeah, you sort of jump right into that. You're just following right along. That's awesome. So I was going to ask you about that. So we are just a couple blocks, two blocks off of Canal Street right now. So that was the early 20th century, I think, the
1896, I believe, was the exact day of the Vidascope. And I believe it was 636 Canal Street. I'm pretty sure it was the exact, which is now... Of course, a liquor and t-shirt shop.
Right.
Of course. Why would, you know, yeah.
But it feels like we've started to have a renaissance in New Orleans with those sort of small movie theaters. For years in Uptown New Orleans on Britannia, there's a Britannia Theater, great little theater. I know that you're a big proponent, a big fan of the Broad Street Theater.
Which, I mean, that's my neighborhood, you know, the Broad Theater and the Brine and everyone over there. They do a great, great little event. And it's they off this beautiful neighborhood, affordable theater, you know, like, I mean, when you were a child growing up here, you had theaters in the neighborhood.
Yeah,
you had
absolutely.
Them. I mean, there were some on Claiborne. They were here and there and everywhere.
Lakeview.
And so it's great to see them come back. And I think what they do is a great thing. Affordable movies for the neighborhood. And they took on some water a couple weeks ago from that little random flooding pump shortage issue thing we had. But they were back up and running the next day. So it's a good thing. So, yeah, and I think, you know, people love movies. It's escapism. It's a great way to not just beat the heat, but beat life and, you know, and everyone just escape from today's struggles and challenges, because we're going through a difficult time, I'd say, which is, you know, it's for another podcast, though, not for the movie one.
Sure, but I did want to mention that. We'll put in the show notes. I'll get a couple from you. I certainly want to give a shout-out to the Broad Street and maybe a couple others so that people that are in town, people either from New Orleans or hanging out here for a while, want to go to a neighborhood kind of theaters. And also, you see, the Broad is one, but there's many of them. They still have the old marquee and some of the architectural details. And it is like stepping back in time.
Mm-hmm.
Which sort of I'm going to use as a segue to talk about some of the earliest movies that were in New Orleans. I think probably people think about Streetcar Named Desire, of course. and the movie adaptation in 1959, 58, I think.
Okay.
Sandow, a little bit. King Creole.
King Creole, little Elvis Presley. Not going to sing the crawfish song for you right now.
And I won't do it either. Maybe a couple more Pisco Sours and we'll get there.
Streetcar Named Desire was 51, I believe. 66 years ago, yeah. But that was the first movie I think people really think of when they think of New Orleans. Mm. But if you really want to get to like the roots of our filming, I think, you know, the first motion picture they consider filming was a movie called Tarzan, one of the early Tarzan. I think that was 1918. But then if you go up to talking pictures, which I consider the real birth of film, when film really started here, it was 1938. And that was a Cecil B. DeMille film called The Buccaneer about the pirate Jean Lafitte, which if you live in New Orleans, everyone knows pirate Jean Lafitte, or at least you know one of the Lafitte bars on Bourbon Street. You know?
Absolutely.
At least you know one of those, right?
Yeah.
So that's when it really, really, really started kicking into gear. And but back in the day of early Hollywood, though, too, they wouldn't even film much here. They'd come here for a week, like Streetcar Named Desire, shoot some exterior scenes.
Okay.
Then go back to Hollywood, build your sets. You had your crew there. You weren't going to fly everyone out. So if you watch a Streetcar Named Desire, they actually have some curved streets in the French Quarter. Looks a little janky, you know? It's a little odd.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? The French Quarter is, I think, one of the very few spots in the city that is a grid. You know, when you get much further than that, we contour according to the river. And so it's not that way, but that's interesting.
Hence the north, south, east, or west.
Right.
And if you've been here or lived here, you know what that's about.
See, so you've picked that up. We don't use compass directions here.
You can't use compass directions here.
I would think that most of the audience knows, but maybe they don't, that Easy Rider, 1969, was a classic, obviously, filmed here. Most of it filmed here.
You'd be amazed how many people nowadays that come and take my tour that do not ask about Easy Rider. They do not ask about A Streetcar Named Desire. I think now that we were in such a modern film industry, I'm seeing a lot younger generations that are coming here that weren't alive during those filmings. And they've never seen them, and they probably wouldn't even understand what Easy Rider was about. They wouldn't understand that counterculture movement, bike across America. Guys can't have long hair. What are you talking about? It just would make no sense to them. So nowadays, they're not even asking for that stuff. They're here to see all the current stuff.
And I guess to your point, the film, there's been over 200 films, I think, in New Orleans. At least now. But easily, well, more than 100 of those, maybe more, are in the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, that's when the bulk of it's,
So being of a certain age, just a couple years older than you, I think about that. I think about, I made a note so I wouldn't forget, I think about Live and Let Die.
Rest in peace, Roger Moore, who just passed away a few weeks ago.
1973, filmed at least in part here in New Orleans.
Yeah.
We did a couple episodes with the good folks over at the Historic New Orleans Collection.
Okay.
And we talked about Pretty Baby with Brooke Shields in 1978.
All right. It's a little racy movie, yeah. All right.
And it was racy and controversial at its
time.
Those
French directors, I know.
You had, Brooke Shields, I think, was like 12, 13 years old.
Topless and naked in a sex scene.
So that was at least in part set at the Columns Hotel on St. Charles Avenue.
Yeah, all the interiors were filmed at the Columns Hotel.
Okay.
And there's actually a Pretty Baby room you can go spend the night in.
Is that right?
Yes, there is.
So my favorite cheesy, and I said I don't watch a lot of movies. I have 5-year-old twins. So for the last 5 years, I've seen a lot of movies, but I've seen The Trolls and Moana and you know, it's mostly animated, Pixar, Disney, that sort of thing. But my favorite, and I'm jumping ahead, but my favorite sort of cheesy New Orleans movie is The Big Easy. 1987 with Ellen Barkin and John Goodman and Dennis Quaid.
Young Dennis Quaid. Yeah, it's. I wouldn't say it's cheesy. You know, I think I show that clip on my tour every day. I do get a lot of locals visiting, and they bring their friends and stuff. And that's the moment where I hear gas, and people just sound appalled because Dennis Quaid opens his mouth.
Right.
And he's speaking in this patois that he's created, this hybrid like gangster Brooklyn meets Cajun kind of guy.
The worst New Orleans accent
ever. Not really sure like what he was trying to create there, but it just didn't work out. So the minute I turn that clip on, he opens his mouth, people are just like, oh my gosh. And just people are floored away. It's the worst thing probably ever. Yeah.
But you know,
but it's a great movie.
For me, it kind of made the movie because I'm sure he didn't mean it to. Maybe he did, but it created this campiness about the movie. So it was so much set in New Orleans. And as a New Orleanian,
share.
It just made it campy in a way that it's one of those, and I certainly want to get into sort of the places that you take people and the things that are sort of most requested. But for me, and I wish I need to lock a better movie memory in my head, but there's a scene where Ellen Barkin's running along the Bayou St. John by the Cabrini Bridge, which is the Blue Bridge locals call it the Cabrini Bridge. It's a walking bridge now. And they stop and there's a whole interaction there. And I don't know why, but as a runner, that has been locked in my head for now 30 years or whatever.
It's all the time now.
And I don't know. It's a fun movie. It doesn't take itself seriously.
And you got to remember, a lot of those movies and those TV shows aren't made for us. They're not made for New Orleanians.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, there's certain TV shows like NCIS New Orleans isn't made for us. You know, it's made for people that don't really know New Orleans. It's to give them an overview and a taste of New Orleans. Because we could, we love our culture and we're protective of our culture. We could pick it apart all day long. You know, that's when you go back and you want to talk about somebody who did that really well. We can talk about David Simon, who, if you all know the TV show The Wire, considered one of the best TV shows ever made on HBO, came to New Orleans. He's a part-time resident and did Treme for 4 years. And him and Eric Overmyer did their homework. They lived here. They knew the city. They hired locals. They researched it. Everyone involved with that knew what they were doing, to the point where every little inference was a little New Orleans quote. There's a scene we do on the tour every day on Frenchman Street where John Goodman, he goes to Frenchman Street and he's singing music. And he says to the little violin player, he's like, she says, thank you. And he's like, always for pleasure. And if you live here, there's a movie called Always for Pleasure about Mardi Gras Indians. So there's all these little moments in that TV show that were so well thought out and planned, and just such a beautiful thing to see somebody, you know, really try to do it right and, you know, and care about it and realize it's important to us.
Yeah.
So that made me a lot. So big shout out to David Simon for that. Thank you.
So
great guy.
We did episode 26 of the podcast was an unofficial guide to Treme. And one of the things, I don't know if I mentioned it back then, but one of the things that Simon grew up in Baltimore,
right? Yeah. Yep.
But one of the things he did the day it was released locally was he wrote an op-ed to, I think it was addressed to New Orleanians, right? And he basically said what you just said. He said, look, our goal is to make this as authentic as possible. And the judge of that will be how many nuances do you find that we got wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And I think they really did, just like The Wire said in Baltimore. They really took great pains to make that an accessible show for people that aren't from New Orleans, but a show that New Orleanians would say, you got it.
Yeah. Did you watch all of Treme?
All of it a couple of times.
It was a very cultural, spiritual, cathartic event, too, if you didn't live here during that time, because it would air on Sundays. And it was this moment, like Bufa's and all these bars would have these viewings. And it'd be so somber, because this show takes place after Katrina, and every season's 1 year after Katrina, and things weren't good here. Right. And they don't sugarcoat it. And they show how life really was. So you'd be in these bars and restaurants watching these shows on Sunday nights with people that lived through this, had lost friends, lost homes. And it was kind of depressing, but really cathartic for those people. And it was a tough but amazing communal experience all at the same time, especially since I didn't live through Katrina.
Sure.
But to be a part of that and really understand what they went through. And I think that was one of the challenges of the show, viewership-wise, is that a lot of locals didn't want to relive that. Because
right,
when you
it
watch
it, soon.
It's like watching a documentary. It's like, right. Oh, this is what I'd be doing, hanging out in Frenchman Street, watching, you know, Kermit Ruffins at the Blue Nile or whatever, you know? And then I think the problem with the show for outside viewership was it was felt too much like a documentary to them as well. So
right.
It's hard for them. If you didn't really understand New Orleans culture and really want to learn about it, and you weren't going to get the show. So it never really found that great viewership. So we still hope one day. I was talking to David Simon during Jazz Fest. He comes for Jazz Fest every year. And he's like, one day, people are going to get it. He's like, it's going to catch on, just like The Wire.
The Wire
was
that way.
Yeah,
absolutely. So it's a perfect fit for the audience of the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast, because they're crazy about New Orleans, whether they live here or not. And so that was a really requested topic, and it was one that I get a lot of questions about. And I think one of the things they did great, like you said, is they used so many local folks. And they use so many local scenes so that if you were in New Orleans, you could say they got that right because it's in somebody's house or it's in a bar or it's in, you know, and you mentioned Kermit. Kermit is sort of ubiquitous in New Orleans, but was so involved in that show. And we were talking just before we came on about our friend Paul Sanchez, John Boutte, who, of course, wrote the song, the theme song of Treme, long before the television show. But just as New Orleans as you can get.
And think about what that did for those musicians. I mean, you can go visit every musician who played on that TV show Treme. You can go visit them and see them perform. And really cool about that show, they recorded all the music live for that television show, too, which a lot of people don't want to mess with. So for those 4 years, they were hiring as many local musicians, and it created, opened up so many doors for them. You know, people flocking to see John Boutte, you know, at DBA every week, you know, just a wonderful thing. I mean, you could see what happened to Kermit, you know, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And
so
it was a great thing for a lot of people. And you can visit all those locations, every single one of them, except for The only thing that was fake in the show was WWOZ, where I did a show for many years because obviously it was a working radio station and they couldn't use it. So that's the only thing that was really a set. One of the only things that was really a set on the whole entire show was WWOZ, where Steve Zahn played a fake version of Davis Rogan.
Yeah, and Davis Rogan himself is a performer. You can see him sometimes.
And he's in the show, too.
You can see him sometimes at Boofa's Lounge, which you mentioned, which is, for listeners, it's right on the edge of the Marigny, the French Quarter, and the Treme. So it's just a block off of Rampart Street there in the back corner. But you've heard me talk about back of town, in the back corner of the French Quarter, right across Esplanade.
Oh, yeah. And that's a great thing, you know, all those locations, once you get to that region, too. All those have been used, and by this point, everything's been used in film and television. You know, you could go to the R Bar, which is actually Scott Bakula's bar in NCIS New Orleans. So you could go to like this little bar tour of that neighborhood via the movies and TV shows. Then you can go to Frenchman Street, you know, which was just using Preacher the last couple weeks, which is a wonderful show on AMC. So you can do this like little bar, movie tour, TV tour, and everything's been used at this point. When you film 200-300 movies and TV shows, everything's been utilized.
Sure, I mean, the city's not that big. Well, and that's a good, I've sort of been a bad host. We've been on 25 minutes, and I haven't mentioned, you can find your company, New Orleans Movie and TV Tours, over at nolamovies.com. And also on Instagram at Nola Movie Guy. And I love the pictures you show there.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about, if somebody's interested and they come in, or they're a native like me and they want to kind of learn a little bit more about the movies, how does it work? They go on the website, they sign up, and what can they expect?
It's all done online. You know, I try to create this immersive movie tour. So I essentially built a van. I took a 14-passenger Ford van and gutted it, took the benches out, put in individual chairs. So there's only 10 seats now. So it's a very limited tour. And every seat back has a headrest with a video screen.
Okay.
So everyone has their own little TV. And we actually drive around this city and show you clips from movies while at the actual location. And you kind of get a city tour as well. We start in the French Quarter, go to Marigny, the Frenchman Street, pop up to the Treme a little bit, CBD, Warehouse District, Garden District. We drive by Second Line Stages, which is our main movie studio here in town, swing back. And if we're lucky, you know, we'll drive by an actual movie or TV show filming in real life, because, you know, we have a lot of that here. So we get lucky a lot of times. This week we got to drive by Queen Sugar, the great TV show for Oprah Winfrey that she's doing, which is doing wonderfully. Then we're able to be filming. Oh, Disney! You love Disney. We're filming a brand new Disney show for you to watch.
I did see that on your Instagram.
Yeah, it's a brand new Disney Marvel thing called Cloak and Dagger. So it's a little slow right now, but we got some stuff done. So it's fun. So I get to take people and I become good friends with all the people on the production. So if we're polite, we can stop and we can visit the sets and say hello. We can go take pictures with Scott Bakula if the timing's right, which the ladies love to do. It's an amazing thing too, and of all these celebrities and movie stars we have in town, Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise. The women, all they want to do is find Scott Bakula. And if you've seen Quantum Leap, y'all, or one of the Star Treks, you know what I'm talking about. But they love Scott Bakula, and he's just been a great. They're such a great crew to have in town. They're so inviting and wonderful and such a great crew. Have you ever run across them when they're filming?
Yeah, I run across here and there. And I think one of the things that, at least from my perspective, that celebrities, whether they're sports celebrities, movie celebrities, that they enjoy about New Orleans is a little bit of casual indifference. You know, New Orleanians, as a rule, don't tend to flock. Like when they see, I don't know if it's just a, you know, we just sort of acknowledge people and move on.
Yeah, or say, hey, you want to grab a Pisco Sour real quick, Brad Pitt? And sometimes they say yes, and sometimes they don't. You know, and that's a great thing too. You don't see people running around autograph hounding. You know, you don't see people running around asking for selfies when they're having dinner at the restaurants, because, you know, they're here to do the same stuff we are, to enjoy the city.
But
because you're going to, and it's a small city, you're going to see them on Frenchman Street at dinners and stuff. And it's fun. And I think one of the things, the problem that no one cares about their celebrity, I think everyone in New Orleans thinks that they're more famous than all these celebrities. I think we all think in our own heads that we are more famous than all of them. So we have a celebrity ego battle going on with Hollywood.
That may explain the casual indifference, right?
And then I think they fly under the radar with the tourists, because people don't really know we have this film industry.
Sure.
So people aren't expecting to see them. Because all the time people would come up to me. And I had this girl one time, she was staying at a hotel, and she said, you know, she's like, is Mark Wahlberg in town? I was like, yeah, why? She's like, check, I was in the gym this morning. I was all alone with this one guy. And it looked a lot like Mark Wahlberg. And I was like, yep, that was probably him. And she's like, I had him all alone in a room and I didn't even say anything to him. So they fly under the radar completely, even one-on-one alone in gyms.
Nice. Yeah. Are there a couple? So do you have a standard sort of a standard set of stops, or do you adjust that according to what's going on or according to what people are interested in?
I've got a standard route. I started when we first started. It was very standard and, you know, standard. Yeah, it's a good word for it. But now that we film so much stuff and people have such different likes and dislikes.
Sure.
No one watches the same content anymore. When I grew up as a kid, we had three TV channels.
Right.
You go to the water cooler and everybody could have a discussion about the same exact TV show, right? Everyone watched the same stuff. You had no choice. But now with so much content, people are watching so much different stuff. So now what I do, I basically start the tour and I'm like, what do y'all want to do? I have like excess content with me and I take requests. I'm like, okay, y'all want to do Twilight today? We do Twilight. You want to do 21 Jump Street? What do you want to do? All Nick Cage movies? Yes, please. I can do 2 hours of that.
Wonderful.
So every day I let them dictate the tour, which makes it fun for me. It keeps it from getting stale. But nowadays it's pretty much people want to go to the American Horror Story Coven House, which is the biggest tourist attraction in New Orleans. That's more famous than the French Quarter these days. That poor guy that owns that house, or outside his house all day, every day, the Buckner Mansion. Beautiful house.
Yeah.
Even architecturally, you know, like TV shows. So they're all, that and NCIS, you know, it's just driving people here, though. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And come on down, visit all these wonderful sites, and you can just see them on your own. I'll take you. Yeah.
So what's a couple spots that you think either, let's do a couple that people probably have seen and would think, and then you could point them to. So like, NCIS, for instance, I know they film all over town.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, they have their main office, you know, the NCIS headquarters, which is on St. Anne, which actually is not on St. Anne. It's actually a brick parking lot across from the Bourbon Orleans Hotel. It's all done in a set somewhere.
Yeah.
That one really disappoints people because that's the one thing people get on my tour. Like, I want to go to NCIS headquarters. And I take them there. I'm like, there's a parking lot. They get a little disappointed with that one, but they're still excited to see it. Right now, we have a movie out called Girls Trip, which is like the number one movie of the summer, which is blowing up the world. It's amazing. So now everyone wants to go find the zip line. Have you seen the movie yet?
Not yet.
Very inappropriate scene happens on Bourbon Street.
Date night.
Yeah. Which there is no zip line, but there's a zip line scene where Queen Latifah zip lines across Bourbon Street, gets stuck in the middle, and has to relieve herself. It's really funny, inappropriate, weird scene, but now people want to find that. They want to go to the Benjamin Button House in the Garden District. Yeah. So, yes, there's a lot. And it's just really diverse. And it's really all over the place, depending on the age group, what they want to do.
That's really great. How you can customize
it. I never know what I'm getting every day. It's a complete surprise to me what's going to happen.
And I hadn't thought about that. When you and I were growing up, you sort of watched what was on. Maybe we had VCRs and tapes, right? You'd go rent them down the street. But now people can binge on anything. And they can take a deep dive and go back or forward, or not forward, but right. You can really dive in, and that's a really interesting dynamic.
No one's watching the same content. No one. I'll have a tour every day, and every single person will want to see something completely different. You know, when I first started, though, it was Benjamin Buttonhouse. It was Interview with the Vampire. It was Easy Rider, James Bond. You know, they had the set ones that everyone wanted to do, and not anymore.
Well, and I think it's interesting you mentioned like Interview with a Vampire. Not only can you see sort of some of the places where the books and the movies took place, but you can see the house that Anne Rice grew up in.
Where she wrote it.
Or where
you go to the house where she wrote the book, which is great, you know? And I know she wants to come back here too, so hopefully we get her back in town.
How about a couple of actors that have made, much like you, made their home in New Orleans? John Goodman's been here a long time now.
Haven't seen him around much lately because he's working too much if you watch movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's getting ready to do the new season of Roseanne.
And then going back, and again, I'm gonna date myself. John Larroquette.
Huh?
John Larroquette, which goes way back in TV these days.
We also had, what's his name? The magic guy from Night Court.
Harry.
Harry Anderson, who left after Katrina. And who had a magic shop down there on Esplanade in Decatur, too. He had a magic shop here. You know, then of course, you know, we have Jennifer Coolidge, who, if you watch American Pie, Stifler's mom.
Yeah.
Jonathan Schwartz from Weekend at Bernie's.
Right.
Who else lives down? Sandra Bullock's here sometimes.
Right.
So we got some people live here. Jessica Lange from American Horror Story bought a little place somewhere around this neighborhood.
Right.
You'll see her riding around on a bike every now and then. And you know, people are like, witch. If you watch American Horror Story, she's the head witch.
Right.
So it's really funny to see the head witch rolling down the street.
And again, you mentioned we're in the Central Business District right on the edge of the Warehouse District, a couple blocks off Canal. We're at the Catahoula Hotel. They were gracious enough, whether they realized it or not, to host us for this podcast today. But this is really sort of a booming area, and you do tend to see a lot of people. This is an area that 4, 5, 6 years ago, there was almost no residential community here. We're very close to the Superdome, to City Hall. But now with the, we were talking before we came on, with the medical center complexes being built just down the street, and this area has really been revitalized. So now this whole area near the Superdome, which except for Saints games was sort of dead, is a residential area. There's lots of places. And so you start to see a lot of people. It's attractive, I think, for people who are going to make their home here part-time, or it's accessible. You're right on streetcar line. You're in the middle of the city.
Yeah, and a lot of the city people, too. A lot of film industry people that are used to living in L.A. or New York that transplants for the film industry. They love their downtown kind of vibe, too. So we got a lot of film people living downtown nowadays as well. It's a great neighborhood. Yeah, we ran out of space to build homes.
Yeah, and
we had to go up.
Condo living was not a New Orleans thing. People weren't really used to that. Yeah. I lived in Northern Virginia for a while, where everyone lives lives up, right?
Yeah.
But that's a new thing here, and it's been an interesting vibe. And again, we're in...
And this is the one neighborhood where they film the most movies and TV shows, too, believe it or not. That's CBD in the Warehouse District, because they're always looking for a generic downtown. So you're going to see CBD, the Warehouse District, in every movie we put out. But it's going to be Chicago. It's going to be Washington, D.C., L.A. Could be San Francisco sometime. It's been Paris, France in a TV show. So they're going to turn this neighborhood into whatever they want to, because it doesn't really have that New Orleans flair architecturally to it.
Sure.
It's not, I wouldn't say it's generic, but it's more generic than the rest of the city.
Right.
So this has become the filming hub for New Orleans. I mean, you work right by the Superdome, you said.
Yeah.
They did Logan there, the supervillain movie with the Wolverine guy.
Yeah. Right.
And they turned that into the Harrah's Casino, Oklahoma City Superdome. Yeah, why not,
And this may belie my ignorance of the movies, but wasn't the relatively recent Planet of the Apes filmed block or two from where we are?
Yeah, a block away at the four-way intersection over here. We actually turned... Did you ever see it?
Yeah.
It was one of those beautiful sets you've ever seen, folks, in your life. They turned downtown New Orleans into downtown ape apocalypse for 4 months. Dirt, signs, trees, blown up cars. It was the most beautiful thing. And they were so cool. We would visit every single day and walk through and take tours through. That was a very special time. If you lived or worked in the neighborhood, not so much.
It was a little bit of a pain.
Yeah.
But it was amazing to see what they did. That's a movie you really should. You want to sort of be surprised at a New Orleans look.
Yeah.
They took, like you said, this downtown
business
district and really like put in all this growth. It's hard to describe, but this greenery and kind of aged it. And it was amazing.
Yeah. If you've never seen a movie set and you don't think about the stuff, the art, the projects that have to go into it. These people arrive months and months before they start filming. You have to get the carpenters here, the landscapers. They have to build all these sets and stuff. So people forget about all the love that goes into these movies that they watch for a half hour and they're like, I'm good with it.
That's as a New Orleanian, one of the things, I have an Instagram account at Beyond Bourbon ST. And one of the things I take pictures of architecture largely, but you would find, particularly maybe 2 years ago, you'd go through neighborhoods and you'd see the truck set up all over the place. Or you would get, I live in Uptown New Orleans, and you get the notices on the door saying, I have a craftsman style home. And people, the set designers and things would want to come in and take a look and see if it would fit a vibe.
That's the money. That's a jackpot right there.
We never actually did it, but you would see it so much in the neighborhoods. And,
it was. At the height of this 2-3 years, we were filming 8 things a day. 8 was like our average. 8 movies and TV shows every single day. And for New Orleans, it's a small city, and that's a lot.
Sure.
They take up a lot of space, a lot of infrastructure, but it's great. There's websites you can list your property nowadays. I've got a scout coming here to look at the Catahoula Hotel very soon, So it's fun, and it's a great injection of money into the economy.
Yeah.
Really interesting story. They did the new Tom Cruise, Jack Reacher movie here in New Orleans. It was New Orleans. It was Washington, D.C. It was a bunch of different stuff. But they did a French Quarter scene, and they filmed at night for about a week.
Yeah.
And they had giant lights posted above the French Quarter. I'm talking lights and huge intrusion for all the neighbors. So what they actually did was they went door to door, knocked on the doors, and cut all the neighbors a little check as a little inconvenience fee. So they're here to be good neighbors, and they've really been great about it. No one complains about them except for the lack that they take parking spaces.
Right.
No one wants to come home after a long day and have Will Ferrell in your front yard. As much as I love Will Ferrell, I just want to park in my spot and go into my house.
But it is fun. It never quite gets, yes, it gets inconvenient, and we've certainly experienced some of that near where we live, but it never quite gets old. It's sort of the thrill of seeing it. It's still the movies.
We live in Hollywood. Right. We live in this make-pretend land. You know, when you see the stuff like the Planet of the Apes, it's like, it's kind of a unique thing because it's like the birth of Hollywood, how Hollywood in LA would have been, you know, 100 years ago or so.
Sure.
Like the golden days of that. And the really excellent thing about that is that when you go watch these movies and TV shows now, we go to the theater, you're going to spot someone you know in all the shows. It's all your friends. The local casting companies, they like to hire locals. So you're going to watch all your friends. All your friends are going to have opportunities to be in all these shows and movies. So you can turn on any Nolan's product and see someone you know. That's so much fun. Because if we went to LA, I've been in a bunch of movies and TV shows. So if I went to LA or New York, I would never get a job. They wouldn't even like talk to me.
Right.
But here they're like, hey, do you want to go work on True Detective with Matthew McConaughey tomorrow? I'm like, yeah, fine. I'm like, I'll do it. That's fine.
Well, and that was, again, one of the things maybe to your point, to David Simon's point about Treme. As a local, it was so cool, and even years after the fact, to see it and see people you know. Right?
Yeah.
There's something that never gets old about seeing your name or your friend's name in lights, in the movies, in TV, in the newspaper. Right?
It's our product. It's like we made this. Connection. It's like we did this. Hollywood came here and they kind of organized and funded it, but we all made it. And you know, and 95% of these jobs do go to locals. You know, they hire the above the line people, you know, the directors, the director of photography, the main actors. Those are all hired out of Hollywood. But when they come here, all the background actors, all the principal day players, the people just have a few lines, all the background people, those are all local New Orleanians, everyone in that show.
So if you and I were going to go out, what's your sort of favorite one or two things that you like to show people? If you were getting to pick, what movies and what sites sort of interest you the most?
Where do I take my friends? Yeah. My friends want to go see Where Korean Jesus Lives at 21 Jump Street. That's the one people want to really, my friends want to see. They love really bad, fun comedies. And nowadays, everybody's watching this wonderful new TV show called Preacher.
Yeah.
Which is, season two is all set in New Orleans as well. It's an interesting show. If you haven't watched it, it's about I don't have to explain this show. But everyone knows who Seth Rogen is, the big funny guy. And it was his favorite comic book. So he decided to turn it into a TV show. So in the story, an angel and a demon got together and had a baby. They weren't supposed to do that. It's like not allowed. So God has their baby locked up in heaven, their entity baby, and it escaped. And it has now escaped and come to earth, and it's trying to find the perfect spiritual host. So it's gone into different spiritual hosts and didn't like them, and it blew them up into little pieces. So now it's in this preacher, and it likes him, and it gives the preacher the power of God. So it's a preacher, his 120-year-old Irish vampire best friend, and their assassin girlfriend, and they're on a road trip around America to find God. But not spiritually, physically. God is now physically missing from heaven. And season two, God is heading to New Orleans because he likes jazz, and he wants to visit, wants to see jazz music. So you're going to see them running around DBA, the R Bar, Bourbon Street, looking for God in New Orleans. And it's a crazy, zany show, but it's cool to see them looking for God on Frenchman Street,
and
I guess.
They're not hardly the first people to be looking for God on Frenchman Street. So I think that's a great thing.
And it's turned out to be a huge show for New Orleans. So it's going to be another winner, another hit for us alongside NCIS. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be good.
Is there a movie, and you may just have said, is there a movie or two that you really like the most of all the movies you can
think? Of course. That's got to be something I was in. You know, obviously, a great movie. You probably definitely didn't see this one. It was called Hot Tub Time Machine.
No, I missed
part
that one. Part two.
Yeah. Yeah. You could keep missing it. You'd be totally fine. No, but if I had to pick my favorite movie ever filmed here, I'd have to say it has to be Runaway Jury. Because it was a movie I loved here before I moved here. You know, one of those John Grisham books turned into movies. And they don't turn great books into movies often. Usually literature people are like, there they go, ruining another book. But the John Grisham people love how they did that movie. It's just a great cast, and it takes place here. It's all in the French Quarter. John Cusack, Dustin Hoffman, Gene Hackman, Rachel Weisz. Just a brilliant cast, brilliant acting. And yeah, it's just one of those timeless movies I can watch all the time.
And they filmed a couple of adaptations of Grisham books here, right?
We did the Pelican Brief.
Pelican Brief.
Did a little bit of The Client. So we did three of them. Because, of course, he was from, I believe he was from Mississippi, maybe? He's from the South somewhere.
I want to say Oxford, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, because all of his books are set in the South because he grew up.
Yep.
Yeah, Mississippi Burning and all that stuff. Yeah. So that'd be my favorite movie if I had to choose one, which I don't do. And people ask me all the time, and I don't choose. But for you, Mark, I will choose.
Well, thank you.
It must be the Pisco Sour.
Yeah, there you go. You know what I get asked about a lot, too, is, and again, this is probably because of my age, I get asked a lot about the real world. People want to see the real world house. And that house looks nothing, well, very little on the outside like it did when they filmed Real World.
I believe it's a different color, right?
Yeah, it's a different color. They completely redid it. It was beige, it's white.
It was white,
now it's beige.
Yeah, the Real World out on St. Charles Avenue. It's really funny. So now there's two Real World houses, though. There's two of them, actually. And once in a blue moon, someone will ask about them, and I'm like, which one? And then everyone's referring to the 2000 year of the real world.
Right.
That's like, because that's when real world was still slightly,
sort of in its
slightly
prime.
Real. It wasn't totally scripted yet.
Right.
I think they said only the first season was actually unscripted.
So again, guys, if you want to check that out when you come into town, visit nolamovies.com and make an appointment with Jonathan and go hop in the van and get to see what you want to see and a little bit of what's going on here in New Orleans right now.
And I promise you, I will not make you watch me in Hot Tub Time Machine Part 2.
Unless you really want to. I assume that's
nope,
on demand.
I don't even bring it with me. I have no clips of me with me at all.
But I do think, my ignorance of the movies notwithstanding, I think that's a great sort of viewpoint to explore New Orleans. It's a lens to explore the city.
And that's the whole thing I wanted to create too. I wanted to make it more than just a movie tour. I wanted it to be like a city tour as well.
Sure.
So when we go to Preservation Hall to do Cincinnati Kid, I'll tell you the history about the Jaffees as well. So I'll throw in some other stuff as well. We can talk about music and food. So I try to make it all encompassing and a city tour as well. So even if you're not like the you don't have to be a hardcore diehard movie fan to enjoy my tour.
That's what I wanted to do.
And you get to see New Orleans through the eyes of the movies.
Right,
versus
exactly.
The eyes of someone else. And we have a small van, so we can go through the French Quarter and through the Garden District. All the neighborhoods, all these big bus tours can't really navigate because of size restrictions.
Yeah.
That's why we've always kept it small and intimate. Yeah.
Do you start in a specific place every time? Or do
yeah,
you
we start. We start down by the Canal Street Ferry. It's our beginning and our end.
Ah, right at the ferry landing there.
Really creepy places like the old Market Street Power Station.
Yeah.
Which people get freaked out about. They're like, why are you taking us to this abandoned building?
So that's been used in a lot of movies. And that, for whatever reason, in the podcast has come up a couple times recently. So for longtime listeners, that power station is sort of the back end of the Warehouse District, the beginning of the Lower Garden District, not quite to the Irish Channel.
Yeah, if you look upriver from the French Quarter, you'll see two smokestacks upriver, right above Mardi Gras World.
Right
you can
next to Mardi
see
Gras
it,
World.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's interesting in a sort of weird historical sense is, I was telling you before we came on that I interviewed author Richard Campanella about Abraham Lincoln coming to visit New Orleans. So there's no way to know for sure, but Lincoln came in a flatboat, and the landing for the flatboats was very roughly right in those couple, in there, right, pretty close to... You can't tell for certain where he landed, of course, but near Mardi Gras World, near the power station, right in there.
Oh, yeah. And that is actually the most used building in film in New Orleans these days, too.
Is that right? It's got to be pretty versatile.
Right by the movie studio, A. All the movie sharks are right there, B. Yeah. And if you need a post-apocalyptic building for a Terminator battle or for some apes to hide out, you don't need to build a movie set. Have you been in there?
Yeah.
Okay, folks, you're not supposed to go on this. Don't listen to Mark. Don't do this. But there's a thing called urban exploration. Do you know about this?
No.
Where people visit abandoned facilities all around the world. And that's one of the two spots people come to visit in New Orleans. They go there, then the old abandoned Six Flags amusement park. So we'll drive by the power plant. People are going inside there all the time. Because if you go, it's... Y'all Google Market Street Power Plant. It looks like a movie set. It's one of the coolest interiors you've ever seen. And it's just cheap. It's a cheap movie set.
One of the things that's interesting to me about that place is when you're in it, and I suppose if you set the shot...
Which we've never been in it, of course.
Yeah, yeah. You could be anywhere. But you could also, and some shots have seen, angle it so they can catch the Mississippi River Bridge. And so then it's instantly recognizable as New Orleans. Wow. And I've seen that done both ways, which is
in any time period.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times, it's usually the future. It's usually like post-apocalyptic Terminator, Apes Battle, Looper, Tom Cruise Oblivion. It's usually set in the future.
Okay.
Yeah. But sometimes they'll drop dead bodies behind there and NCIS or, something like that every now and then. Or have a big fist fight with a Sylvester Stallone in a really bad movie called Bullet to the Head. It was in, it's been a ton of movies.
Well, and you mentioned just a moment ago in passing the Six Flags. So we used to have an amusement park way out in what's called New Orleans East, and it's abandoned, essentially. And that's been the site of a couple of movies in the not too distant past.
Yeah, probably the highest grossing movie ever filmed in New Orleans, actually, which people don't know, Jurassic World.
Yeah.
So they actually built a false amusement park in the parking lot of an amusement park. It makes absolutely no sense, y'all. I totally get that. But They needed privacy. They needed space and privacy. So they had everything they needed out there. So they built a full dinosaur park, dinosaurs and all. It was beautiful. Velociraptors, they're everywhere. So that turned into a de facto, movie set out there. Yeah, they even built the little oil rig for the Deepwater Horizon, the oil rig movie.
Well, again, guys, this is a great opportunity to see New Orleans through a different lens and get to enjoy, if you are a movie buff, to get together with Jonathan at nolamovies.com and go on a tour and get to explore. Yeah. I love how you customize it so that it could be sort of through your lens, or if people have a real interest, you can do that.
Yeah.
And again, if you love New Orleans, if you've been here before and you're looking to do something a little different.
Yeah.
So if you've been here a bunch, you've taken the streetcar undoubtedly, you've been down St. Charles, mm-hmm. but to really get to dive into, say, the Garden District through a different yeah. set of eyes, a different perspective.
Yeah.
That's
fun.
Really
I enjoy
cool.
it. I'm very, very thankful. I get to do what I do. I love what I do. And I've got the best job in the world. Yeah. Yeah.
So again, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk about NOLA Movies, your business, but also NOLA Movies in general. Yeah. I want to thank the Catahoula Hotel for, again, they sort of unwittingly, but they've nodded their head at us. So that's all right. Catahoula Hotel here in the CBD has a great little bar, by the way, two bars, a rooftop bar and a bar right when you walk in. They have a nice little courtyard when it's not 110 degrees outside. And so when you're in town, I would encourage you to come check it out. It's a great sneaky move, by the way, when you're coming to town in just a couple months for Saints games. We're only about four blocks from the Superdome. And this is a nice small place to come get a drink and enjoy kind of a cool vibe.
A little secret hideaway. So when they also have rooftop cinema night on Tuesdays.
Oh, wow.
Free rooftop movies here as well.
All right.
Which I have nothing to do with. But I do that as well.
Again,
thank you for having me, Mark. That was a delight. Thanks for so much for having me on your show. It's great.
It's been a lot of fun. We'll put over in the show notes, which will be over at beyondbourbonst.com/43. We'll put some links to how you can contact Jonathan, and also a couple links to some local movie tours, movie theaters, if you want to come in town and check that out.
And go support Louisiana Film. Go see Girls Trip. Start watching Preacher. Watch Claws. Watch NCIS New Orleans. We got a lot of stuff out there for you. Support Louisiana Filming. Don't watch anything filmed in Georgia.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that discussion. I had a fun time talking movies and TV with Jonathan, and I hope you enjoyed it too. You can find the show notes over at beyondbourbonst.com/43, including links to Jonathan's site, New Orleans Movie and TV Tours. If you want to hear more shows like this one, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have an idea for a future episode, or you just want to reach out to me, my email is mark@beyondbourbonst.com. One other thing before we close. We created a Facebook group where we can all share ideas, ask questions, and tell stories about all things New Orleans. You can get there by going to beyondbourbonst.com/Facebook. I hope to see you there. New episodes are available every other Wednesday. And if you're enjoying the show, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you and me. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.